Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security. And if you've been listening to the podcast, John Cohen is not new to you. But John, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Hey, Sean, it's great to be with you, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. John, recently we've seen, obviously, socio-political elements going on, the Israeli-Iran conflict. And there's been interesting threat intelligence coming out from that, elements from ThreatWar that we've been reporting on. Wanted to dive into that with you, set the record straight, get it, get your thoughts on what we're seeing, and really move into a perspective of where we're seeing hacktivism and some of those elements starting to be part of what is or was a kinetic war, but now we've all understood that these are hybrid threats and that it's not just a physical implementation of these types of acts, but there is a digital cyber element as well. So, John, let me turn it over to you and get your thoughts.
So, Sean, I mean, this is an issue that's sort of near and dear to me in the sense that back in the 2011-2012 timeframe when I was at DHS, I led an effort involving DHS, but others in the federal interagency to develop what we called the Iran playbook. And there were conditions going on geopolitically around the globe that caused concern that a conflict with Iran might broaden between the U.S. and Iran. So at DHS, we worked with the FBI, with the intelligence community, with state and local, with members of the Jewish community to really think through how Iran would respond if tensions with the U.S. escalated. And there were a couple of lessons that held true then that hold true today. One, Iran's going to do everything it can to avoid a direct traditional military confrontation with the U.S. They lose that war and they know it. However, Iran also operates in such a way that if they feel that they've been the target of aggression, they will respond in a way that they believe is commensurate with what was done to them, and that they would employ three hybrid areas of attack. One would be cyber, focusing on critical infrastructure, on government facilities, on Israeli government facilities in the U.S., facilities and systems associated with Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries, and also systems associated with the U.S. Jewish community. We also were concerned about the potential for kinetic activities, whether they be conducted by operatives of the Iranian military or intelligence services or their proxy organizations like Hezbollah or Hamas. We were concerned that they would seek to enter the U.S. and conduct attacks. And we knew that that Iranian military and intelligence services had a very expansive presence in Canada and Central and South America. And so part of our focus was to prevent them from entering the U.S. and coordinating with crime groups here in the U.S. in order to conduct an attack. We're also concerned about lone offenders, and it's a concern that remains today in the sense that we have increasing levels of violence by people who are inspired by content that they see online. The newest addition, and we didn't really see this back then, but we're seeing it now, is Iran is very active on the information operations front. And we've actually seen occurrences over this past year where Iran has used information operations to facilitate and inspire localized demonstrations, sometimes even destructive or disruptive demonstrations, in furtherance of their objectives. So as we look at the potential for an Iranian threat today, post the U.S. action in that region, it really falls along the same categories. And that's what the ThreatWar piece really sought to sort of pull the thread on and provide insight to those who received it.
Absolutely. So we're seeing really, in some cases, John, and you'll correct me, an evolution in some in terms of the tactics, techniques, and potential procedures that we're seeing from the region, really is one, the enablement of the hybrid threat becomes a true reality. And I don't think it was ever not real, but our appreciation of it, John, and you've certainly educated me on this, is that the abilities are starting to be augmented, where we're moving, as you mentioned, from pure kinetic, where we see there's certain advantages from certain countries, right? US, the industrial military complex, you know, phenomenal in what it's built. But compared to others, they need different tactics necessarily in order to necessarily escalate certain activities that they feel ultimately is their justification in terms of necessarily going about attacking certain institutions, certain individuals, certain religious groups. And we're seeing that evolve over time. And I think, John, where I appreciate what we're doing is that continuous awareness, right? This is not just, oh, these are the tactics, what we've saw, seen before, but we're following that advancement. We're utilizing our abilities from open source intelligence, our own intelligence skills and capabilities of our staff and representatively others in our partnerships with other agencies and whatnot to really start to inform. And I think our informed practice makes a better prepared defender. And John, so I wanted to get into some of the activities that we're doing in this space and why we're, with the current conflict, we're seeing that really is a vital information flow so that defenders like myself can be prepared really for certain types of attacks. And I know one attack technique that was used was distributed denial of service. And so that's something we should, you know, be aware of and cognizant with respect to certain systems from certain agencies, certain organizations. Does that align with your thoughts, John? Or you know, please correct me where you see anything that I've mentioned that may be incorrect.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, the concept of hybrid warfare as part of military doctrine is not new. It's a military doctrine that was embraced by Russia and China going back over a decade. What is new is the expansion of that doctrine to not only other countries like Iran, North Korea, but also non-government organizations. We're seeing terrorist groups. You know, we're seeing criminal organizations. There's a Department of Justice Office of Inspector General report that just came out that talked about how Mexican drug cartels were hacking into video systems so that they could identify informants working with the FBI and with DEA in Mexico, and they were killing them. You know, you mentioned DDoS attacks. You know, when you talk to pure cybersecurity specialists, you know, they sort of like roll their eyes when you say DDoS, saying, oh, you know, it's not a sophisticated cyber attack. You know, it's not going to bring down a power grid. Right. But if you, as you and I have discussed in the past, if you can target a 911 system for a DDoS attack, so law enforcement can't receive calls for service and communicate effectively during times of crisis, and you combine the DDoS attack on the 911 center with an active shooter situation, it becomes a catastrophic incident, minor cyber incident, but catastrophic, law enforcement situation. So Iran right now has, we've seen several things over the past year or so by Iran. We've seen DDoS attacks directed at law enforcement. We've seen DDoS attacks directed at websites of state and local governments to impact their ability to communicate with the public through their website. We've seen efforts by Iran, and there's just a report overnight that an Iranian-linked hacking group is claiming that they were able to gain access to emails from senior officials in the Trump administration, and they're looking to release those emails in an effort to embarrass the administration as part of a information operation. We saw claims of responsibility by another Iranian-linked group just after the U.S. military operation, where they claimed that they were able to effectively shut down Truth Social for a short period of time through a DDoS attack. And again, as we've also seen Iran actually be able to penetrate the controller or Iranian-linked groups, be able to penetrate the controller of a water management system. And while they did not introduce poisons into the water supply or disrupt the water supply, they did use it as an opportunity to promote anti-Israeli symbology and messaging, but also undermine the public's confidence in our drinking water system, where they sent a message, basically a subtle message saying, hey, we can break into your drinking water systems. We didn't poison your water this time. We just used it to spread a message, but the underlying message is they could have if they wanted to. And so that's what's a concern from a security perspective, is not only the fact that they're not reticent about using cyber as a way to advance their geopolitical or ideological objectives, but also the way they use it in conjunction with other attack techniques.
Absolutely. John, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back.
Most organizations want to streamline their cybersecurity and compliance efforts.
It's just not always easy to do so on your own.
That's where a CIS Secure Suite membership can help.
It provides benefits, tools, and resources designed to help you implement the CIS critical security controls and CIS benchmarks.
Secure Suite can help you strengthen your cyber defenses, comply with common standards, and cybersecurity frameworks, all while saving you time, money, and effort.
Apply for membership today by visiting cisecurity.org.
Start secure and stay secure with CIS Secure Suite.
Okay, welcome back. So, John, as we've gone through, those types of assessment and the information operations approach, one being redefined, obviously there's socio-political elements that are engaging certain Iranian-aligned hacktivists to promote certain ideology, their objection to certain actions and activities from respective countries, institutions, organizations. Where are we starting to see the need for better informed approaches to threat management and threat intelligence so that we can start to align these things? Because you'd mentioned really kind of a domino effect of certain attack techniques, ones that are, you know, and again, certainly benign in certain instances, but combined with other elements, the particular target, their motives, the underlying opportunity, and then really successful implementation, that they come to really the fold of saying this is we have a capability. Think about how we could then use this in such a way. You mentioned the drinking supply, water supply as being an element of that. But we can abstract that to different industrial control systems across many different parentheticals. And I think that also highlights the need for defense at various layers within various institutions across many different regions, right? Because I don't think this is just a U.S.-specific issue. I think worldwide there are certain implementations of technology from an industrial control perspective that follow the same pattern, in fact, using the same technologies potentially. How is that something that we want to really start to highlight with products such as ThreatWire and the utility of what you and your team is doing? How are we then wanting really those that are really need to consume this information? How are we making them aware that this is something they should be paying attention to and potentially even acting on it by building certain threat models in order to react to things, maybe not to themselves, but what they're seeing in the news, the media, obviously these information operations kind of raise a new defense condition in some cases for organizations to really start to think about their infrastructure and potential gaps that they may have. Well, what do you think about that, John?
I think that is such an interesting point and question that you're raising. And I think there's some real challenges. So as I'm thinking about what you were saying, there's several things that come to mind. When I was the acting Undersecretary of Intelligence and I would meet with, you know, people who were in charge of cybersecurity for Fortune 50 companies, they would say, all you give us is, all you give us DHS are the technical, you know, the technical specs of a piece of malware or the technical attributes associated with cyber attack. What you don't give me is any contextual information that explains what are the objectives of the cyber threat actor, what are the tactics they want to use, what, you know, and that, you know, and they say, absent that information, you know, it's more difficult for our cybersecurity group to place anomalous behaviors that they may be observing within their infrastructure that maybe that hasn't been identified yet. So we were hearing from some of the, you know, what I would describe as the CISOs who are safeguarding the systems associated with some of the main drivers of our economy, saying you're not giving us enough when you only give us information after an attack and it's limited to the technical elements of the attack that was used. I will tell you today, I still hear from some CISOs, when we do try to provide that information, why are you sending me this? I don't have time to read this. Just send me the technical information so I know, you know, what kind of scans I need to do or how I need to update my, you know, firewalls or my protective measures. So I think within the cybersecurity world, there's a little bit of a disconnect between some CISOs who say, I want to understand the objectives of the adversary and have the technical information, and those who say, I just want the technical information. The second challenge is, you know, we have senior officials at the state and local levels in particular who are responsible for protecting our community from threats, who, when you start talking about cybersecurity, their eyes roll up in the back of their head and they start going into a catatonic state and they just don't want to hear it. And it's those same people who are talking to governors and mayors and county executives about budget priorities. So the other thing, what we've tried to do is to educate them and in particular to educate them on why they need to be concerned about cyber threats, because it can impact the threat environment within their community significantly, but also, as importantly, it directly could impact their ability to provide emergency and non-emergency service. And so when you explain it that way to them, they say, well, of course we need to be concerned about this. And they do two things. One, they place a higher priority in becoming educated about cybersecurity threats. And then secondly, they are more supportive in bringing CISOs into high-level discussions regarding, you know, planning discussions regarding how they're going to deal with emerging threats within their community. And that's good for the safety of the community as a whole, but it's also good from a cybersecurity perspective, because the more senior officials who traditionally weren't that focused on cybersecurity, the more senior officials that we can, you know, can acclimate to the cyber threat environment, and the more senior officials we can have prioritize cybersecurity as overall efforts to protect a community, the better we're going to be from a cybersecurity perspective. So I still see this as a work in process, because, you know, for the reasons that I explained earlier, we have a lot more people who are informed today than 3 years ago about the evolving threat environment, multidimensional threat environment facing our communities. We have more people today in law enforcement in particular, but also Homeland Security, that are really attuned to how cyber fits into the general threat environment and how terrorist groups and foreign intelligence services and hostile foreign powers and criminal organizations are using cyber attacks. But we still have far too many people who continue to operate in a stovepipe, you know, narrowly focused world that they lived in 3 years ago.
Yeah, completely agree, John. The couple points, I'll just pick, you know, a couple of the elements that you mentioned there is, in some cases as well, one of the things I'm finding is certain CISOs within organization may not have necessarily the gravitas of what that title has in other businesses. So providing the information may not be enough to get it, you know, past the point of one implementation, projectization, or even prioritization within certain organizations, right? Because it's, certain groups will say, well, you've got the title, you fix it. It's, well, I need more than just fix it. We need an awareness. We need to understand the impact, because this is a business risk, not just a technology or a security risk. And sometimes that gets lost in translation. And it's really part of this podcast. So we named it Cybersecurity Where You Are, because where you are can be really different in terms of either the maturation of security within your environment, your underlying awareness, the technical element versus more executive level, contextual type information. So we're trying to balance that, John. And you're absolutely right. It's very difficult because we're trying to meet organizations and individuals from a CISO, from an information security department perspective, IT, really those charged with the responsibility, which I would say is everybody, but you know, that's me being a CISO, in terms of security, trying to get that message across that this is not just, it's not going to affect me, right? It's another organization. We're too small. We're unknown. That they don't care about my infrastructure, my network. Where it's got to be the flip side. If you think that they don't care, you're in trouble. One, you know, and we've had this adage, John, and it's probably going to be the eye roll, but it's not a matter of if, but when. And for those organizations, I think it's so important to just get a contextual element. And this is why I think ThreatWire helps in that space, because there is the technical links, but it's really written in a way that is ingestible by many different consumers. And so where I think that helps is there are organizations, aligned hacktivists, different types of attack and threat that we should be aware of, not just, you know, respectfully, the elite nation state type of attack approach, but many different parenthetics in the space that really all organizations need to be aware of. And I think doing it this way starts to bridge that gap. I don't think it closes the gap, John, but I think it builds that bridge together where then certain organizations, departments, personnel start to make those links themselves and start wanting to be informed because they understand the risk and respectfully the elements at play from this threat environment that, as we mentioned, John, this is continuing to evolve. So it's, we've talked AI implementation from your team. We've talked the different types of attack and threat vector from organized crime to nation state to hacktivism. All of these things are elements that I would say, John, need to be assessed, need to be understood. And again, it may not be your daily read, and it doesn't have to be, but you've got to have that information at hand because you've got to know when you need to react, John. And that's where I think that the importance of the work that you're doing really hits home for me. Again, let me throw that.
Yeah, no, what the team tries to do, look, when I was trained to do executive level briefings in government, I've briefed presidents, I've briefed secretaries of cabinet secretaries, senior law enforcement officials, governors, mayors, it really comes down to three things to be an effective briefer. One, describing the threat. Two, describing why it's important to understand the threat. And three, describing what you can do about the threat. Without answering the why should you care and what are we going to do about it, you just sort of leave the recipient of the briefing with, a message of be scared, be very afraid, right? And that's not of much value. And so that's what we try to do with ThreatWire and the other analytic products that come out of the Countering Hybrid Threat Program is we try to understand and convey an understanding of the threat environment or a specific threat, describing it in a way that clearly articulates the tactics and targets or the targets and tactics that are going to potentially be at risk. We explain how this relates to the recipient or the consumer of the intelligence. And then we provide guidance on not just generally, but sometimes very specifically, what are the types of things that could be done to counteract and reduce the risk associated with a threat. You know, the threats are going to be out there. They're going to continue to be evolved. There are threat actors out there who do nothing but think every day of how they can conduct a cyber or physical attack against the United States or targets within the United States. But you can significantly reduce the risk of those threats if you are aware, you develop plans to address, and you implement those plans effectively.
Absolutely. John, we'll finish off with this if we can. And one thing that's near and dear to my heart, and you just mentioned it, you touched on it, so I'm going to pull on that thread as well, sir, is I think the exercising of these elements through tabletop is so important. I think it's one to build and train necessarily. So thinking it, you know, relating it back to sports or something like that from an analogy perspective is training so your reaction is prepared. It's necessarily been practiced so that you can not be caught necessarily in a, deer in the headlights type situation or caught by surprise. And you can necessarily actuate a capability in time, right? That you know who to communicate to. You know what necessarily we have to think of in terms of reactions. So our reaction time is increased. We look to assess who's responsible, who needs to be notified, who's the team that I reach out to, that can I start to address certain actions, activities, responses. And more importantly, John, is communication. I think communication in this space is very, very important. So now we can really then move to an approach that becomes incident response rather than incident regret, and that we've practiced through tabletopping, through these exercises, that we really start to train ourselves, our teams with that. And the outcome becomes awareness that can then be fed up in terms of here are the gaps, here's the lessons that we've identified, here's what we need to do to improve if we're going to see this type of activity in the future. I want to get your thoughts on that, John.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, again, we've talked about this in past podcasts, but I go back to the lesson learned in the lead up to and during the 2024 election, where we not only, a year out prior, we worked with law enforcement to do an in-depth assessment of the potential physical threats, cyber threats, information operations, and disruptive events that state and local jurisdictions could experience in the lead up to and during the election itself. We didn't stop there. We worked at a very local level. CIS teamed up with national county, major city chiefs, major county sheriffs, National Sheriff's Association, with emergency managers, with CISOs, Homeland Security advisors across the country. And we not only helped them to develop plans on how to deal with these different types of threats, but we actually help facilitate tabletop exercises where fire chiefs, police chiefs, sheriffs, CISOs, emergency managers, heads of the 911 centers all got together and walked through some of these multidimensional scenarios that we've been talking about. Now, what happened during the election? We actually experienced every single threat we anticipated. We had acts of violence. We had two assassination attempts directed at a presidential candidate. We had plots disrupted. We had cyber operations conducted against state and local organizations. We had information operations, including AI-generated content being promoted by Russia and others, trying to undermine confidence in the voting process. And we had bomb threats. We had, on election day itself, 100 unique polling sites in key swing states were targeted with bomb threats that were, the majority of which were organized and executed overseas as part of a coordinated effort. So why didn't we have a major disruption to the election? Because people were prepared. When they were confronted with those threats, the community-based neural pathways had already been created. So they didn't have to spend a lot of time saying, oh my God, what's happening here? We better develop a plan. And we better figure out, who we need to talk to in the midst of the crisis. Those plans, those communication pathways, those operational activities were already not only just prepared, but people knew how to implement them. People knew who to communicate with. And if their communications got disrupted, they had secondary communication capabilities. That's why they were. So that's the lesson, right? And the threat environment continues. It didn't end on election day. In fact, I would say it's probably even a little bit more volatile than it was then, for a variety of reasons, maybe a future discussion. And the conflicts overseas are feeding right into this threat environment. So the same preparations, the same planning, the same practicing and exercising that was done before really needs to continue, because state and local jurisdictions in particular, but also private sector organizations, are going to continue to be targeted for cyber or physical attacks, to be subject to information operations by hostile foreign powers, terrorist organizations, criminal organizations, and violent groups here in the United States.
Wonderful. Well, John, again, another phenomenal episode. I think, again, with the exercise analogy, we can't let these skills atrophy. We need to continuously feed with good threat intelligence and exercise in this space. Probably taking that analogy too far, John, but had to throw it in there at the end. I want to thank you and your team. John, where can our audience find out more information about the work you and your team is doing?
Go to the CIS website, look up multidimensional threats and or ThreatWAT itself, and you can gain access. But to your last point, Sean, I mean, you know, if you're aware, you can be prepared. And if you're prepared, then you're more secure. And that's what we're aiming for, particularly on a cyber front. So, you know, the information is out there. All you have to do is consume it.
That's it. John, again, thank you so much for you and your team. Great work. And thank you to our audience. Questions, comments, concerns, reach out to us at podcast@cisecurity.org. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. We've got episodes dropping every Wednesday, so make sure to sign up to hear content like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.